Okay, good morning, Wednesday morning Bible study. We are going through this book, 10 Lies Satan Loves to Tell, written by Pastor Andrew Jones, published by CPH. If anybody needs a copy, there's still more up there, $15 each. So last week we went through chapter 1, the first lie, lie number 1. We talked about that lie as you cannot trust God. Now, I think that lie is kind of foundational for all the other lies, because all of Satan's lies start with the idea that you can't trust God. Just like, you know, he's reflecting, Pastor Jones here is reflecting the Ten Commandments from God. These are the 10 lies of Satan. And in the Ten Commandments, the very first commandment, you shall have no other gods, is foundational for all the other commandments. Same true for lie number 1. It's foundational for all the rest. So we talked about that last week. Any lingering questions, or as you went through, anything come up from last week that you want to quickly recount or ask a question about? All right, let's get started on lie number 2. Lie number 2, your value is based on your performance. Huh, seems like I just heard a sermon on this. Or preached a sermon on this. So just a little reminder for you, those of you who were in church this past weekend, I was talking about what are you seeking. Jesus asked the first two disciples, what are you seeking? And I said, we often seek three different things. One of those things is status or value. We seek to be valued. We want to know we are worthy. And one of the wrong ways to establish your value or your worth is based on your performance. Okay, so I did touch on this in that sermon. That was not intentional. This is just the coincidence of the Holy Spirit. All right, so I'm going to skim through the chapter. Take, I don't know, half an hour or something to do that, and then we'll go on with the questions and the Bible passages. So page 36, right at the top, what makes a person valuable? And then the last paragraph there, that right in the middle of the page, there are realms in our world where our performance rightly plays a role. First, in our relationships, we are in danger of dehumanizing people if we reduce them to their performance. Second, God does not view you or value you according to your performance. Are there areas in the world, and I think he mentions one like specifically in athletics, a professional athletics, a professional athlete. The more you perform, the better you score, the more, you know, baskets you make, the more touchdowns you make, the more valuable you are, and the higher your contract is. Was that how it should be? Well, I don't know, I guess. I mean, it's professional sports. It's not a spiritual matter. But it is a case of your value is based on your performance. I remember a little bit of that before I became a pastor and was working for the bank. Had a performance review. That's what it was called. Performance review every year. And your raise or your being subject to a promotion was subject to your performance. Now, that's how much the business values you as an employee. So sometimes, maybe just because it needs to happen in certain secular situations like this, your value is based on your performance. But not in a spiritual sense, and not by God. That's where we're going with this chapter, okay? Satan in the garden. So, the second paragraph, bottom of page 36. Who is the agent who must act to improve value? You. There's the start of Satan's lie. You want to be valuable? Then you need to do something, okay? English translations do not show us this immediately, but the you Satan uses as Genesis 3 is plural. Let me give you just a little side mental trip from this. So this is a little bit outside of what we're talking about here. But when Satan is talking to Eve and he says you, did God really say to you? That you is plural. Both in Hebrew and in English, it's a different word for a singular you versus a plural you, the second person pronoun. In English, it's the same word. So if you say you, and I mean just one person, or if I say you, and I mean a whole group, you have to try and understand the difference by context. Okay? But in Greek and in Hebrew, so this was written in Hebrew, It's a different word. So we know it's plural. So if Satan is saying to Eve, you, plural, what does that mean? Adam was standing right there. That's why, you know, when I talk to confirmation kids and we say, well, Eve was the first one to sin. Well, in time she was the first one to sin, but Adam is standing right there and he did nothing. And then he was duplicitous in her sin by he also engaged in it. So it's both of them. That's why it's Adam and Eve. And so Adam was standing right there. So we can't just blame Eve, okay? Although we can't blame Adam and Eve either because, frankly, all of us sinned. All of us would have fallen prey in that situation. Okay, so that's a little side thought. It's a good thought. The you is plural. Top of page 37. I really like this insight. So I highlighted this paragraph and put stars by it. In this lie, Satan introduces a concept that is entirely foreign to a perfect creation. Scarcity. In the perfect, abundant, evergreen Garden of Eden, Satan makes it seem like two perfect people are lacking. Like they need to do more. Like they need to have more. Like they can attain the things they are lacking through their own actions and performance. Satan invents a problem and then points God's people inward to find a solution. I think that, I had never really thought about that. But I think Pastor Jones has a good insight. This is one that was very instructive to me. In the perfect, there's nothing lacking. But Adam and Eve didn't have the full understanding of good and evil like God did. That's why, you know, Satan pointed to them that. That's part of being perfect. Part of being perfect is having a little bit of blissful ignorance about evil. Yeah? So they weren't lacking anything, but Satan invents a problem. You're lacking. Now you need to do something about it. Go eat from that tree. Oh boy. That was a pretty sneaky lie, wasn't it? I think we often think that way too about our own lives. We're lacking in something. In this sinful life, maybe we are lacking a little something like self-control or patience or humility. We're lacking those things. But in the perfect, there will be nothing lacking. When we get to heaven, you will lack nothing. Everything will be complete. Okay? All right. Bottom of page 37. Satan's desired outcome. Through this lie, Satan seeks to curb human beings in on themselves. Yes, he does. Satan wants, at the end of that paragraph, Satan wants us to abandon the certainty and seek our identity and validation elsewhere. When we believe our value is based on our performance, our care for others might be driven by two unhelpful motivations. First, for the sake of competition and comparison, and second, for the sake of validation and admiration. So by Satan telling us the lie that your value, your worth, is based on what you do, not only does he get us to distrust God, but here is a second problem, a second outcome from Satan. He corrupts our good works. That's what Pastor Jones is talking about here. Why do we care for others? Our motivation is corrupted. So, just to talk about this for a moment, why do we do good works? Do we do good works in order to earn value and be valuable to God and therefore be saved? No, that's a heresy that's existed throughout the church in various small or big ways throughout the history of the church. So why do we do good works? You know the answer.
To thank God,
one reason. So God saves us first. Paul says that. While we were yet sinners, Jesus came and died for us. So one reason we do good works, we help other people, is to thank God. Thank you, God. So I'm going to serve my fellow man. What's the second reason we do good works?
Show love.
Yeah, because they need it. The neighbor needs it, and we love them. So we help somebody out of love for them. Two reasons why we do good works. What does Satan want us to do? Oh, you're valuable because you do good works, and that taints our thinking so that we do good works for the sake of competition and comparison. Oh, I'm doing more good works than that person, so I must be better than that person. Well, you just corrupted your good work. You just put sin on top of your good work. Or the second one is the sake of validation and admiration. Well, I want to know why I'm valuable, and I think I'm a good person. Look at how many good works I've done. So you're validating yourself. Your good works are no longer innocent. They're no longer done to thank God and serve your neighbor. Now they're done to put praise upon you and give value and admiration to yourself. Do you see that right there? Follow what I'm talking about and describing? That's a problem. I often have said, and some of you who have been a long time in my Bible studies, you've heard me say this, some of our good works we do without even knowing them, that we do them. And that's a good thing, because then you can't corrupt it by sinful thinking, by sinful pride. Oh, look what I did. I did a good work. I will tell you, it just happened to me this morning. I had to leave first. I went out, and there was, what, about 2 inches of white fluffy snow on the car? So I brushed my car off, and I thought, Jill's not going to know that she has to brush the car off, and she's usually like spot on time, so she's not going to have time. I better brush her car off too. So I went around and brushed her car off with snow. Was that a good work? Yes. And then I thought to myself, I hope she notices and tells me thank you. Whoa. I just put a little veneer of sin on top of that good work.
Whoa.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, it just happened to me this morning. Now, in her eyes, was it still a good work? Yes. In my eyes, before God, I'm like, I'm trying to point some attention to me instead of just doing it for the sake of doing it. You see the difference, right?
Yeah.
And did she?
She did not say anything. Maybe she didn't know.
She had to brush it off again.
She might have had to brush it off again and didn't even know. That's true. It was about a half hour later till she had to leave, so yeah, it might have accumulated more snow. Yeah, John.
Doesn't that kind of open up a bigger argument to say that there are no selfless acts?
I think in our humanness, it's very rare to find a completely true selfless act.
Yeah.
Almost all of our good works in some manner, either small or big, are tainted by our pride and our desire for attention. And yes, you're right. It's very hard to, I think it's pretty rare if at all. There's one selfless act we can point to, right?
Yeah.
Jesus on the cross. That was a selfless act. And he wasn't seeking attention. He was doing it out of love for you. Right. Good. Other questions so far? Okay, forging on. Turn the page. Page 38. Right in the middle. How painful is it when you feel disregarded? How much do you resent being made to feel small and insignificant? Satan amplifies these feelings so that we seek a constant diet of instant gratification. We want attention to be valuable, but we also want attention so we don't feel disregarded. So we want that attention, don't we? Yeah, I think that's true for all of us. You know, Jill was at last night's Bible class, and I asked her, I said, how often do I come home and ask you for some feedback on the sermon? And she said, pretty regularly, which is true, because I want to know how the sermon was. Was it a good sermon or not? I'm actually trying to open the door for a compliment from my wife. And she knows that. And she usually says, oh, you did a fine job. It was a good sermon. And see, here's the thing. I always get compliments from you, the congregation, when you're coming out from church. Thank you, Pastor, for that sermon. So I think there's a little bit of this in me that I want to have that validation to know that, well, I did a good job. Is that true for everybody? Yes, that's true for everybody. We want to know we did a good job and we're valuable.
But on the other hand, don't you sometimes ask because you want to
improve? Yeah, that's true. You're right. So there can be a humble ask for feedback in order to improve yourself. That's okay. But then there can be a prideful request for feedback because you want to draw attention to yourself. So where's the line in there? That's a tough thing, isn't it? Yeah, you're right. I mean, there can be a legitimate reason for asking for feedback. All right, top of page 39. Our actual performance takes a back seat to how others perceive us in our performance. In this way, Satan's lie is not only your value is based on your performance, but more sinisterly, Your value is based on the admiration and praise of others. Or I rephrase that second part. More sinisterly, your value is based on how others perceive your performance. So you do something good, and whether you actually did something good or not, if others perceive you as having done something good, you're like, okay, that's fine, that's good enough. Yeah. Yep. Yep. She's the preschool aide, so she's out there right now. They're looking in the window. All right, there's a hand up. Where did I just see a hand up? No? All right. So I think sometimes we're more concerned about how others perceive our good works than the actual good work itself, because we find value if others think we are doing good works, whether we actually are or not. That's the second part that he's saying right here on the top of page 39. You see that? That reminded me, that little example right there from Pastor Jones in this, that we're more concerned about... Yeah, the kids are peering in the window. We're more concerned about how others view us. It reminded me of Jesus' example, the parable of the Pharisee and the publican. Remember that? The Pharisee was up front saying, "Thank you, God, that I'm not like that guy back there." Versus the sinner in the back just says, "God, I'm sorry, please forgive me." So the Pharisees wanted to be seen for doing perceived righteous things. Whether they actually were righteous or not, it didn't matter. They just wanted to be perceived that way. Yeah, that's pretty dastardly. Okay, so the second to last paragraph in the middle of page 39, Satan's desired outcome by telling us that our value is based on our performance is to get us to sin to gain people's praise and to get us to despair when that praise is absent. See, then we place our value based upon whether other people give us praise or not. Yeah.
I think maybe that's why so often when somebody dies, I've heard people say, "Oh, they are such a good person. I'm sure they're in heaven."
You know, that's a good point.
We judge people ourselves that way.
We do judge people that way. And yes, unfortunately, that creeps up in a lot of funeral services, especially non-Lutheran funeral services. I'm proud to say that I think pretty much every Lutheran funeral I've been to, the pastor will eventually talk about Jesus and the forgiveness of sins and faith in Jesus, and that's why the person who's passed away is in heaven. But I have been to a few non-Lutheran funeral services where, yes, they just talk about all the good things this person did. And they never mention Jesus, and they don't talk about faith in Jesus, and they don't talk about the forgiveness of sins, and it makes me sad. Yes, because the world looks at things as to how, what you've done, okay? Other comments or questions so far? Yeah, Fred.
Sometimes we elevate people.
Yes.
To that level.
Yes, that's true too.
And then they didn't do maybe what they did for any recognition, but we elevate them.
Yeah.
And say, "Oh, I'm thinking of like a wing on a hospital."
Yeah.
Put their name on.
Yeah.
And then it's then like creeps in there and it's like, "Yeah, look what we did."
Yeah, right.
We did this.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. We improperly give credit or validation to somebody based on something they do. Yeah, right. All right. Middle of page 39, the next section. The fear behind the lie. What is the fear that Satan is preying on with this lie? Right there. The fear I see lurking behind this lie is that we are not valued or admired. At the extreme, we fear we are worthless. We desperately want to know that we have value. We want validation. Yeah, I think that's true. That's a fear that so many of us have. We want to be considered valuable and worthy. Okay? Next page, page 40, right at the top. This fear and this lie are at the center of many broken relationships and marriages. Absolutely true. Absolutely true. I think the fear that we are worthless makes us, throws a wrench into many relationships and many marriages. We want to know that, well, my spouse validates me or thinks I'm worthy. And I them. And when you don't do that, well, you don't value me. Well, you don't consider me worthy, one might say to the other. And now there's a kink in the relationship, and the devil gets in there and expands that. Okay? I'm going to say a word right. I'm going to say another little side thought just for a minute or two. My wife introduced me to, I give her credit, she introduced me before I ever saw it anywhere else, the book by Gary Chapman, is it? The Love Languages? Yeah. Many of you have heard this or heard of that book. I used that book in premarriage counseling. It was absolutely helpful for my wife and I, because the idea is that there are different ways you want to receive love, that you feel loved or feel valued by your spouse. And we want to show love in the way that we receive love. That's our instinct. So a couple might say, well, I've been showing him love, and I've been showing her love, but they don't think they're loved. It's because you've been showing them love in a different way than they receive love. So the love languages are things like acts of service, words of affirmation, physical touch, quality time. There was one more I forgot offhand. And so what I realized, my wife felt loved in a different way, a different language, than I felt loved. Well, that opened up our eyes to each other. And then she started applying that to our kids as well. Interesting. I think that's part of this. We fear being considered worthless, and so we try to show value to others, but it might be a different way than they receive feeling loved or valued. Okay? So that was just a little side thought right there. If you haven't read the Love Languages book, you can order it online or someplace, and it's really a worthwhile read. All right. All the way to the bottom of page 40, and I really don't have anything else. Anybody got any comments or questions or highlights in these couple of pages you want to bring up? Am I moving too fast? I tend to zip through fairly quickly because I think it helps keep our attention and keeps things moving. Is everybody awake?
Oh, yeah.
All right, good. All right, the lie repeated in the Bible, page 41. That is pronounced Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth. No, you don't hear that name very much. A very, very minor character. Okay? So, if you may remember, and this comes from 2 Samuel, David takes over as king. He is crowned king. Saul has been killed. Saul's son, Jonathan, who, by the way, was the best friend of David. They were the closest of friends. Jonathan was killed. Jonathan has a son named Mephibosheth. Okay? Now, Jonathan's easier to say, isn't it? Now, when somebody ascends to being a ruler, a king or a queen, in ancient times and in medieval times, what is quite frequently something they would do?
Kill everybody.
Seek out any competitors to the throne and kill them. So when David says, go find Mephibosheth for me, Mephibosheth is afraid. He's apprehensive. He's fearful. Why does King David want me? Is he going to kill me because I'm a competitor to the throne? I'm the grandson of the king? And Mephibosheth is fearful. David tells him, no, I want to be kind to you. Not because of anything that's in you, but simply because of my friendship and my love for your father, Jonathan. So therefore, I'm going to be kind to you. I'm not going to kill you. You're going to eat at my table. I'm going to make sure your possessions are restored, your land is restored, etc. What a wonderful, gracious thing. That's what God does to you. God says, I'm going to be gracious to you and bless you simply because I love you. Not because you've earned it. We've all sinned. We haven't earned it. But God's going to show you love and kindness simply because he loves you. All right. Next page, 42, Simon Peter denies Jesus. So you look at the top of page 43, and the second paragraph. In Matthew's account, Peter singles himself out here and says, though they all fall away because of you, I will never fall away. Peter wants to be great in this regard. He wants his performance of faithfulness to be better than everyone else's. Jesus had just predicted they would all fall away when he's arrested and tried. And Peter says, not me, Lord. I'm better than those people. My value is higher than the rest of the disciples because I'll be faithful. But Peter's doing what? He's valuing himself based on his future performance. And then what ends up happening some hours later?
He denies
Jesus publicly in front of a servant girl and some guards, etc. Yes. So Peter falls away. So he doesn't even realize what he said, but he's trying to value him. Remember what the disciples argued about a couple of times? And Jesus had to chastise them? Who's the greatest among them? Oh, there's 12 of us. Who's going to be the greatest of the disciples of Jesus? And they argued about it a couple of times. Jesus said, what are you guys arguing about? And then he chastised them. He admonished them. Well, it's still continuing all the way until Jesus arrests. Peter is still doing it. And then Peter ends up being the second one to fall away, really. Judas was the first. And now Peter denies Jesus. And then, yes, they all run away. All right, so here's another, on that same page, 43, the second to last paragraph, right above that inset. What we say and even believe about ourselves is not always accurate. Sometimes our true identity is hidden from us. I underlined that and put a star next to it. I thought, that's pretty insightful. I never really thought about that myself. I think that's true for all of us. When we do something bad, what do? We tend to think it's worse than it really is in terms of the effect on somebody else. When we do something good, what do? We elevate ourselves much higher than we really should. Our true identity is hidden. We think differently about ourselves than reality quite often. Okay? I think that's true for me. I think it's true for you too in many areas. So something to ponder. What is my true identity? Where does my true value come from? That's the point of this. We're about to get to the answer here in just another moment or two. So, turning the page 44, I don't have any highlights on there. Any comments or questions about these past couple pages? Thoughts about this? All right, either the coffee's not strong enough or I'm talking too fast or I'm covering everything appropriately, right? Oh, I'm sorry. Was I asking for praise? Yeah, Betty?
That last, I underlined that same sentence and put a note on it. Sometimes we hide our identity from others with the masks that we wear.
Oh, yes.
And pretend one thing when it's really not true.
I totally agree with you. We put on a mask and we hide from others our true identity, and we sometimes hide from ourselves our true identity. Yeah, right. Yeah, very good. Yep, I agree. All right, page 45. The lie repeated in our world. Is this lie repeated in the world? Oh, yes. So, look at the last paragraph, a couple lines down. We may wrongly value our friends and family based on their usefulness to us. We may wrongly value fellow Christians based on how much time, energy, and money they give to the church. Well, my wife is only useful to me if she does the laundry and cleans the, you know, house and does the dishes. That's why she's useful to me. Her value is based on that. No, that's wrong. See, this gets back into having marital problems or other relationship issues. We should not value somebody based on what they do. Same thing in the church. That happens in the church sometimes, right? Oh, look at that person, how much volunteer time they spend, or how much time they help fixing up, or how much they give. I don't know how much anybody gives on purpose. I don't want to know. I don't need to know. Okay? That's not where our value is, but we wrongly value that, don't we? Yeah. So here's the tricky part. Because just the paragraph before that, let me go back just a baby step. The paragraph before that, he points out that it's a little bit tricky for parents when you're trying to motivate a child to do their homework and get good grades. And you might say, I'll give you a dollar for every A you get on your report card. Well, now, that might have the possibility of developing in them the idea that they are valuable to you, their parents, based on their performance on a report card. Now, that's tricky. Because do we want to, and I wrote this on the margin of mine, it's a tricky parenting issue. because we want to motivate kids or grandkids to do their best and get good grades without inadvertently having them attach value to their report card on their value. I'm valuable because I get good grades. No, you get good grades because you work hard, and that's a good thing, and I want to motivate you to work hard and do your homework and get good grades, but I love you regardless. Even if you're a B student or a C student, I love you anyway. Okay? That's a little, I mean, most of us in here, you know that. Either we're on the receiving end of that as a child or as a parent, and how do you motivate somebody without wrongly giving them the impression that's their value? Okay? I don't have an answer to that. It's a tricky thing for parents.
Well, and if you get more A's, you're more valuable.
Yeah, right. Right. We seem to have that notion for students, right? The more A's you get, the more valuable you are.
We didn't do that with our kids. We just expected them to do well, do what they could.
Sure.
Gave them money for grades. But they wondered, how come some so-and-so gets paid for their A's?
Yeah, my friend gets paid $10 per A.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, good for them. We expect you to do your best. That's not what we do, you know, or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, Jeannie.
It's hard to compliment someone without doing the same thing.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Jeannie, you do such a great job with grains of grace. But you do it just out of love for other people, not for the praise and recognition of Pastor, right? But so I'm just giving you an example.
Yeah.
Yes, you want to give somebody a compliment, but you hope that they receive it just as a simple compliment, without attaching their value to your compliment. You see what I'm saying? I think that's your point, Jeannie.
Well, it's hard to compliment grandkids, too.
Yeah.
Because you're giving them value for behaving or for doing good grades.
You're right.
Cleaning their room.
Yeah.
I don't know how to say good job without... You shouldn't say good job.
Well, I think you should say good job. I think you should compliment somebody for getting good grades or cleaning their room or doing their chores. But then maybe, I don't know, just kind of spitballing here, thinking out loud, maybe you also attach to that, but I love you just for who you are, or something like that, so that they don't start attaching their value to your compliment, but rather their value because of who they are. Yeah, it's tricky. It is absolutely tricky. Yeah, Debbie?
I just thought, popped into my head, use your gifts from God to the best of your ability.
Yeah, that's right. We do the best we can with what God has given us. That's right. Was there another hand up here?
That's what I was going to say. The comment that I would make to our children was, we didn't pay them for an A, but you've used the gifts that God has given you, the talents that he's given you, and you've done a good job, and I'm very proud of you for that.
Yeah.
So
there you go. So, see, we can find that right in between on this as a parenting issue, or we'll say a grandparenting issue. Okay? All right. Turn the page. So on page 46. Oh, right here in the middle, we're starting to get to the heart of the matter. Right kind of at the bottom of that inset. Our identity comes from baptism into Jesus. Our value comes not from the name we are called in baptism, but from the name that we are baptized into. You are valuable because of who you are, not because of what you do. And I made that point in my sermon, too, when I talked about what are we seeking, and I said here's three common big things we're seeking, and one of those was status or value or worth, and you are valuable because you are a child of God. That's it. Now, all of you know, for a child or, say, a grandchild, if they misbehave, yes, there may need to be some discipline, some teaching, some admonishment, but do you still love them? Yes. Are they still valuable to you? Yes. That's how God looks at you. You are valuable to him just because you are a child of his. You are in his family. You are a member of his family, a son or a daughter of God. And therefore, he loves you, even though we sin, and he has to admonish us and chastise us or correct us or teach us or forgive us and forgive us. He still loves you. That's your value. Comes from who you are, not what you do. That is absolutely key. The very next paragraph. Adding to the challenge of this lie is the fact that our standards are often arbitrary, subjective, and unspecified. Yeah, that's a problem too, isn't it? That our standards change on how we value ourselves based on our performance. All right. Top of page 47. When we judge the people in our life based on performance, we may experience and assume they do the same to us. Well, I don't think we may assume that. I think that's true. We have a tendency to judge other people based on their performance, and so they also judge us based on our performance. Okay? And then here, again, is another one that I highlighted and put a star next to. Right in the middle of that same paragraph. We judge God based on His performance. We use the ease and extravagance of our lives as the measuring stick by which we grade God's performance. Well, God, I asked you for this. I asked you to take away this problem in my life. I asked you for this blessing in my life, and you didn't do it. So, God, you're not valuable to me. I actually had a conversation with somebody once, a while ago, who said, well, I prayed to God for this and that and the other thing, and God didn't perform. He didn't give me what I wanted. So He's not valuable in my life. I'm not coming to church anymore. Wow. So not only do we judge others based on their performance, not only do we judge ourselves based on our performance, but we judge God based on His performance that we perceive, His performance in our lives. Wow. That's a problem. When you judge God based on whether or not He answered your prayers the way you want them answered, what did you just do? You made yourself God. Yeah. Right? Oh boy, that's a problem. All right, the middle of the next paragraph. So I mean the middle of page 47. Prosperity gospel is rooted in this very lie. Your value is based on your performance. How many of you know what the prosperity gospel is? A few of you. Joel Osteen.
Oh.
Okay? If you're not successful, if you're not comfortable, if you're not wealthy, it means you haven't been doing enough as a Christian. You need to pray more, you need to study the Bible more, you need to have stronger faith, and if you do that, then God will value you and He will bless you. That's prosperity gospel. Okay? It is totally wrong theology. So beware of those kinds of preachers. All right. Turn the page. All right, I'm all the way up to the middle of page 48. Comments or questions so far? Just a quick pause. How are we doing on time? Oh, we're running out of time. I'm going to go a few minutes over. You guys might know that. Need something to drink? No? Okay. All right, the truth. What is the truth? Your value is based on God's love. Your value is based on Christ's actions of death and resurrection for you. I said this in the sermon. You want to know how valuable you are? You look right there. Anybody listening? I'm pointing to the cross. You are so valuable to God, you are so valuable to Jesus, that He was willing to trade His life for yours. Yours. Singular. Each of you. Each of you. Jesus finds you, singular, that valuable. Okay? That's where your value comes from. All right. Near the bottom of page 48. If you look to yourself and your own performance for any assurance, you either risk pretending you are better than you truly are, or risk despairing at the reality of how poor your performance is compared with the perfection required for salvation. So if you look to your value, if you want to be valuable and worthy, and you look to your own performance, you'll either be inflated in arrogance, look how good I am, or you'll be deflated in despair. Oh, I can't do enough. Rather, you look to Jesus for your value. Okay, there's the truth. All right. Middle of page 49, that last little bit. So too, our restoration and forgiveness is not based on our past, present, or future performance. Does Jesus forgive you only if you don't sin anymore? Good thing He doesn't. Because we commit the same sin over and over again, don't we? So it's not like, oh, if you perform in the future and don't do this sin anymore, then I'll forgive you now. No, that's not Jesus. He says, I forgive you. Now strive to not do it. Strive to avoid that sin, but if you do, I'll forgive you again. Yeah. It's not based on our performance. God's desired outcome is that we find our value in Jesus. Yes. Right at the bottom of the page, 49, Jesus values us so highly that he chooses to leave the heavens and come down into this world of suffering. He chooses to take on not only our humanity, but also our very sin. Yes, Jesus comes into the pigsty of this world and humanity and takes on our dirt and filth and sin and dies for us so that we are made clean and pure and holy and righteous. How wonderful. Jesus does that. Okay, the love that casts out fear on page 50. The bottom of the first paragraph. Because our value to him is not based on our performance, our value is determined by his love for us. There's a great summary of what our true value is right there. It's based on his love for us. Okay? All right, before we launch into, I'll do the scripture passages first. We'll look at them briefly, and then we'll have some discussion over these questions. Any comments or questions first before we get into that? Thoughts about anything? We can go backward a little bit. Yeah, Dan.
I was trying to find here, I thought, and you said something about the value comparing like the cry, the baby that cries through the sermon to the pastor's sermon, pastor's living sermon. You know, both are valuable.
Yeah.
Which also, last night, this week is Life Week, and Lutherans for Life has each night at 8 o'clock our time, a Zoom session. Last night was a pastor from California who in earlier years when he was in Montana, their son was born, the third child, with Downs.
Okay.
Down syndrome. And just talking about his value, you know, the values there, and value as a child of God. One sidelight on it is interesting. He said, you will probably never be tempted to leave Christ as others in other situations are.
Sure, right.
Which is really an interesting statement there.
So yeah, it is. Somebody with that kind of situation leans on Christ so heavily, they're going to have less temptation to depart the faith, to reject the faith. And so, frankly, people who are born with a handicap, I think they are stronger of faith than people without a handicap. So, and segue off of that a little bit too into something, another thought that pops into my head. Back in Greek and Roman culture, back at that time, so biblical time, if you were a child, you were not considered valuable until you were old enough to work or produce. If you were sick or beyond recovery, or if you were injured or handicapped in some way, or elderly in some way and could no longer work and produce, you were considered irrelevant to society and quite often would be left unattended. So-called taken out to the pasture, to the wilderness, and just left to die. They actually did that in some cases. Okay? Because you're not valuable because you can't perform. You can't contribute to society. Then along came Christians. And what did Christians do? They valued the young. They valued the elderly. They tended to the sick and cared for them. Somebody who was injured or handicapped, they would still care for them and value them simply because they were a fellow child of God. And that started to change attitudes in the world. People would look and say, look at those Christians, how weird they are. They care for people who aren't valuable. Not valuable in the world's eyes. And yet that's what they did. Most of the world's first hospitals, from ancient times to modern times, were established by Christians. They have Christian names to them, even here in America, a lot of them. Or they did, before names got changed. Okay? All right. So let's look at these Bible passages real quick. Give me another, 10 or 12 minutes. How about that? Okay? So the first one there, Matthew 6, 25 and following, I've already got on the screen. This is in the Sermon on the Mount, and Jesus is saying, look at the birds, they're fed. Look at the lilies, how they're clothed in beauty. Don't be worried about things. God will take care of you. You don't need to worry about your performance for your value. God will take care of you. I think that's the point he's making here. The reason why Pastor Jones put it in here. So your the level to which God cares for you is not based on your performance. Because look at, he cares for the birds and the lilies. He's going to care for you. All right, so the next one, let's go to Matthew chapter 10. That's the next one down there underneath that. Matthew 10, verses 29 to 31. So let's see. Here we go. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? And not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father. But even the hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear not, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows. So everyone who acknowledges me before men, I also will acknowledge before my Father who is in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, I also will deny before my Father who is in heaven. Two sparrows for a penny. That's pretty cheap. Now why were they buying two sparrows? Well, most likely for a sacrifice. Okay? For a penny. Wow. Are you more valuable than two sparrows? Absolutely. God knows everything that you need. He will provide it. It's not based on your perceived value of yourself or your performance. God will take care of you. Even the hairs of your head are numbered. Yeah, that's easier for some of us than others. I'm not looking at you, friend.
Most people can't in this life.
Is that that
Yeah.
Yeah. Glare.
All right. The next passage here. 1 John chapter 3. 1 John chapter 3. Verses 1 through 3. You would have heard this before. See what kind of love the Father has given to us, that we should be called children of God? And so we are. The reason why the world does not know us is that it did not know Him. Beloved, we are God's children now. And what we will be has not yet appeared, but we know that when He appears, we shall be like Him, because we shall see Him as He is. And everyone who thus hopes in Him purifies himself as He is pure. Why does God love you? Because you are children of God. Right there it is. You're a child of God, and so He loves you. Now, does He want you to act better? Yes. Does He want you to serve your neighbor? Yes. Does He want you to fight against sin? Yes. But regardless of your performance on any of those topics, He still loves you. He still forgives you because of Jesus. Okay? That's your love. Yeah, Fred?
You know, these lies, these sins that we commit all the time, it makes it hard to even perceive what it'll be like in heaven.
Yeah.
It'll be a totally different life because they're so ingrained in us.
Yeah.
That, you know, to have it all apart from us is going to be so...
You're right. There's a lot of sinful tendencies ingrained in us, and to not have those, yes, life in perfection of heaven will be amazing. And we can't even imagine it.
Yeah,
I agree. All right, one more passage, Psalm 25. I'm only going to read the first part of it, because I think the key part of Psalm 25 that Pastor Jones is quoting it here in the chapter 4 is verse 7. So I'm going to read through verse 7. So Psalm 25 of David. David wrote about two-thirds of the Psalms, not all of them. To you, O Lord, I lift up my soul. O my God, in you I trust. Let me not be put to shame. Let not my enemies exult over me. Indeed, none who wait for you shall be put to shame. They shall be ashamed who are wantonly treacherous. Make me to know your ways, O Lord. Teach me your paths. Lead me in your truth and teach me, for you are the God of my salvation. For you I wait all the day long. Remember your mercy, O Lord, and your steadfast love, for they have been from of old. Remember not the sins of my youth or my transgressions. According to your steadfast love, remember me, for the sake of your goodness, O Lord. What does he say in verse 7? Remember not the sins of my youth. In other words, forgive me. Why? Because of your steadfast love. According to your steadfast love. Forgive me, Lord, because you love me. That's what verse 7 is saying. That's absolutely true. God forgives you because he loves you. You bet. That's the most important thing. All right. Questions or comments about any of those scripture passages? All right, then let's take just, I don't know, 5 or 6 or 8 minutes, or not very long, but a little bit of time. Let's zip through these questions. I did write down some answers to these questions, but I'm not going to say my answers until somebody else volunteers an answer from them. Okay? So this is your participation grade in school. Did you hate that? I would have teachers in high school or professors in college. 10% of your grade will be based on your participation in class. Oh, I was like, you mean I have to talk? What if I don't want to talk? Yeah, 10% of your grade, right here. Okay. So, first question. Where do you see this lie appearing in your life?
Work.
Work, yes. It's in work. And because our workplaces place value on our performance, we tend to associate our value with ourselves based on what our workplace thinks. I totally agree with you. Yeah, Don?
That's right. I was just going to say, I think of all those years of the annual performance review.
Yep, you had those too, right? Yep, performance review.
Yep.
Good. I think that's a main one. I put a second answer here. Sometimes I value myself or devalue myself based on my inability to conquer sin. God, I know you forgive this. Why did I do it again? Why do I keep falling into the same trap, this same temptation? And then we devalue ourselves because we struggle with conquering a sin. I've seen that in my life. I'm guessing maybe you have too. Just a thought for you. Any other thoughts on this question?
Well, that's probably really true when it comes to addictions.
Yeah, that would be true with addictions, right?
Because yeah. Christians do struggle with that. And,
yeah.
And then we'll despair.
Yes.
Because they are not meeting the performance.
You know, some of the newest addictions, and I've talked to some parents about this, video games, social media, addictions. Those addictions are out there, even for adults. It's not just teens or kids. Yeah. So, yes, and we can value or devalue ourselves based on whether we can conquer a certain sin or not. All right, next question. In what areas of life do you tend to care most about your performance?
Self-worth.
Self-worth, okay. Can you you want to know that you think you're valuable based on your performance. Yeah. Sure. Anything else?
It's funny, but I'll say it. Officiating sports.
Ah, if you get all the calls right? If you do everything well?
I've got a game there.
Do you? Okay.
It doesn't get snowed.
All right. Yeah, I think that'd be true. That is a good example. I put down... Oh, yeah, go ahead, Betty.
Being a mom, a grandma.
Oh, yeah.
The performance is... What you say, what you do.
Yeah. You know what? I've seen that in various women at times about, have I been a good mom? Have I been a good grandma? Or your kid does something wrong, whether publicly or privately, and you let it reflect upon yourself. Maybe I didn't do something right. Maybe I didn't perform right or teach them or train them. Yeah, you're right. That can be a problem. And we shouldn't value ourselves based on that. Right?
Dads too,
yeah, dads too.
Even your kids are older.
Yeah, there you go. Ellen?
There's also the other side where many times people will feel that they aren't worth anything. They have a very low self-esteem.
Sure.
So they can think even God can. No.
I have seen cases where people have no self-esteem, and I've had to boost them up. Yeah, you are valuable because Jesus died for you. You're valuable. Yeah. My answer I put down was public areas, doing things where people can see, like Dan's example of officiating. You do something people can see, and if you do it wrong or goof it up, then it makes you feel devalued. Yeah. All right, next question. Can you remember a time when you were afraid you were not valued? What was that like? A time when you were afraid you were not valued. Dale.
Plant had a hard time. They shut us down. They gave the guy leave to plant a $400,000 gift to get away and go somewhere else. The rest of us, they told us, line up, teamwork, and every couple months we're going to cut off a third of you guys and fire you.
Wow. Yeah.
At that point, the stress, I'm in my 40s. Where am I going to find another job to support the family? How am I going to do this? And you really want me to work for somebody else that could be shown better than me, and you're going to fire me because I helped him get better?
Yeah, right. Kind of, it kind of diminishes your motivation for teamwork.
Oh,
huge. Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah, absolutely. Becky?
I think that might have hit us at the time, too, when Mark was in the control room and working 60 to 75 hours a week.
Yeah, well, we'll pay you for 40, but you better work 60.
Or 75.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was unreal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that would be huge. I agree. That would be tough. My example is being selected second to last for the teams on the playground. I think there was one nerdy kid who was skinnier and scrawnier than me. I'm not so scrawny anymore, but I'm still not athletic. What is it like? I think it's depressing. When you feel like you're devalued. Dale just mentioned that. Yes, it's unmotivating, it's depressing. And you might even get into despair. So the next question, whom can you trust to tell you the truth when you are struggling with this lie? Whom can you trust? I know of a few answers.
I would hope your spouse.
Yeah, okay. Hopefully your spouse you can trust to tell you you're valuable because of who you are, not what you do. Yep. Spouses do that for each other regularly, okay?
I think you do every time you say Jesus loves you.
Well, okay. I put down pastor also. Hopefully a pastor will do that. Most pastors do that. Yep, I agree. Those were my two answers. Somebody last night mentioned something that I should have thought of. Yeah, go ahead, Bob.
I would say this congregation, at least for me,
sure.
A lot of people here have boosted me up in the past.
There's a good answer as well. Your brothers and sisters in Christ. A good friend, somebody else who's, you know, honest and trustworthy in the congregation or as a fellow Christian, yeah. Somebody last night said, well, what about God? And I was like, oh yeah, I should have wrote that down.
So did you?
I did now. Can you go to God's word and have God tell you you are valuable because of who you are? We just read a couple of passages. 1 John 3. You're valuable because of who you are. You're a child of God. Yes, you can go to God to hear the truth, right? So there's different areas where you can hear the truth. All right, can you think of other biblical characters whose identity was wrapped up in their accomplishments? Boy, last night's class, they had about 6 or 8 that they rattled off. Yeah, Debbie.
The women of the Bible, in childbearing years, when they couldn't bear children, they felt
undervalued. Oh, you're right. Nobody mentioned that last night, but that's true. Somebody who cannot have children and they feel devalued by that. Yeah, that's a good point. What else?
The kings.
The kings felt valuable because they were king. Yeah, sure.
Absalom.
Absalom? He had good looks. He was a handsome man.
He was strong.
Strong?
He could.
Yeah.
Overwhelm his enemies.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right. Who else in the Bible placed value upon themselves because of their performance?
David,
okay. Yeah, David did. David pretty much committed every sin, didn't he?
Yeah.
And yet, the one sin he didn't commit that's not recorded in the Bible, he did not forsake the true God. He did not go after false gods. That was huge. Okay, who else? Yeah, Don.
Elijah?
How Elijah?
Who was the one that killed all the prophets of Baal? And then
oh, yes. And then he ran out in the desert and said, just kill me now, God, because I can't do anything. I tried, and these people won't listen to me, so just kill me now. So he devalued himself because he couldn't perform or produce results that he thought he should produce. Yeah. Well, the disciples, sure. We just read about Peter, for instance, or they argued about who's the greatest, right?
Pharisees.
Pharisees. Oh, they looked for public admiration and praise all the time, didn't they? They placed their own value based on how many people would give them compliments and praise. Yeah. See, you guys are rattling them off too.
Samson.
Samson?
Samson.
Okay. I agree. Samson is another one. The one that I put down in here, we just finished the book of Acts. Remember early on in the book of Acts, Ananias and Sapphira?
Oh, yes.
So everybody was making donations to the new church. The church had just been formed. It was being led by Peter and James. And people were making donations. And Ananias and Sapphira sold some land they had and then kept some for themselves. But they came to the church and gave the appearance that we sold this land and now we're giving it all to the church for the use for the poor. Well, that was a lie. And Peter called him on it. He said, look, if you wanted to keep some of it for yourself, that's fine. Just say so. But when you're trying to tell us that you are giving all of the money from this land to the church, you're trying to elevate your own performance higher than what you actually did. That didn't work out well for them, did it? They both fell down dead. So, yes, we tend to have, Satan uses this lie. Your value is based on your performance. But where is your value truly based? And you are a child of God, and you are loved by God. You are baptized. You're baptized. That's proof you are a child of God, and therefore you're loved by God, and you're valued by Him. That's where your value comes from. Okay? Final questions or comments? All right, so next week, we'll continue on with line number 3. What is line number 3? You need and deserve more. I just need a little bit more, and then you get a little bit more. I just need a little bit more, and then you get a little bit more, right?
Yes.
So that's next week. All right, if you're able, please rise. We'll close with the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Thanks for coming. Have a good day.